The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, the conversation certainly does continue. Hello and welcome to the Freeman Report. It is Thursday, the 18th of April, 2024. My name is James Freeman. I am the free man. And I've got a great show lined up for you today. Four great guests. First up, I'm going to be talking about those upcoming elections in the UK, which I think could mix things up a fair bit before this year's general election, whenever that's called. Elections will be taking place across 107 local authorities in England. London will choose its next mayor, and a further 10 mayors will be elected outside of the capital. 37 police and crime commissioners will also be elected in England and Wales. And there will be a by-election to select a new MP for Blackpool South after the resignation of that naughty boy, Scott Benton, for breaking House of Commons lobbying rules. Now, while it sounds like that should give us a good idea on what the electorate think at the moment in terms of politics, turnout for local elections is notoriously low. Very, very sad indeed, you know, especially when people complain about the politics they get so much. Usually turnout is around 30%, give or take 5%, which is less than half of the turnout we normally get in a general election. One scenario that we could see materialise is the demise of our current unelected Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak. Because if Conservative voters decide to stay at home en masse and we see a disastrous night for the party, that will boost calls for Rishi to be replaced. Now, it would be pretty risky job getting rid of him right before the general election, because if the party decides to hold an election to choose its next leader, and I think it would be crazy to just select another person, that would mean the country only gets to see the new PM in action for a matter of weeks, because of course we've got the summer recess coming up. One thing that we can be sure of, though, is that it will be a bumpy ride this year, because Labour is not looking so great itself and could also take some punishing losses. I don't think the country is very, very enthusiastic about Keir Starmer. If they do well at the polls in the autumn, it'll only be because everyone hates the Tories so much at the moment. But Labour itself could lose the London mayor election next month, and also a number of councils next month as well, including Oldham Council. That looks very likely indeed. They've got a majority of only one at the moment, which has fallen from a majority of about 16, 17. And based upon my discussion with Raja Mia yesterday, who's standing in the general election later this year, it looks like Oldham Council could fall and many other councils fall from Labour's control. So to discuss all of this, I'm going to be joined by Jonathan Tilt in a moment, who is himself standing to be the next mayor of West Yorkshire. Jonathan, of course, has been on the Freeman Report several times before. I think he would make a great mayor for West Yorkshire, and I'm delighted that he'll be joining me for this discussion in a moment. After Jonathan, I'm going to be asking what is up with the electronic vehicle market. The government has mandated car manufacturers to ensure that 80% of new car sales and 70% of new van sales are zero emissions vehicles by 2030, increasing to 100%. By 2035. And while that's 6 years away at the moment, it is clear that consumers are not bowled over by electric vehicles. According to the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, just 15.2% of new cars registered in March were pure electric. And that was actually down by a percent from the same period last year. So it looks like sales are going into reverse at the moment. In Europe, VW saw sales of its EVs fall by nearly a quarter in the first 3 months of this year. And this week, we've heard that Tesla is laying off 10% of its global workforce. All of this while sales of petrol cars are actually increasing in the UK. Now, this could be down to economic conditions, given that EVs cost significantly more money. But there are many problems with the government's targets that make the current stance by the British government absolutely bonkers. And I don't think there is any other word to describe government policy on this at the moment. Firstly, how are people going to charge EVs, people without driveways, people that live in, on streets where there is no parking? How are they going to charge their cars? I mean, I guess they could rely on commercial charge points, but they're really expensive, which kind of negates then what one of the attractive parts about EVs, i.e. that actually they're fairly cheap to charge. And more importantly, there are nowhere near enough charging points anyway, and there are not enough being built. There's also the problem of the electricity grid itself. We've been told over the past two winters that the electricity companies are actually paying people to use, or not to use, rather, their electricity at certain points for fear that the whole grid will be overloaded. So if everybody gets an electric car, how's that going to work? Absolutely bonkers, absolutely bonkers. The other trend that we're also seeing more generally with modern cars is the huge number of recalls. Just one example in the US, Honda currently has 6.3 million recalls in America. And that's followed by Ford with 6.1 million. All of the car manufacturers have got huge numbers of recalls at the moment. Are modern cars just trying to be too clever with all of the new technologies? So to discuss all of this, I'm delighted to be joined by Jeff Thompson of Jeff Buys Cars, who has over 100,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel, which covers a range of issues surrounding the global car market. Now, before we go over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news, I've got a question for you all. Would you like to see all of your favourite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend? Well, if the answer is yes, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shemarani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend between the 3rd and the 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to do is bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. There'll be plenty of food stalls there, workshops, bushcraft, and lots of amenities will also be provided on site. If you fancy that at the start of May, then to get more information, visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. That's weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. I did say this, I do need to catch up with Kevin and find out how many tickets are left. But when I spoke to him just over a week ago, there are around 150, 200 tickets still going. So not that many, really. So if you do fancy going, make sure you book your ticket very soon. To get in touch with me about anything to do with the show, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you don't follow me on social media, what are you doing? Get yourself over there now, whether it's X, Fakebook, Getter, TikTok, whichever, I'm on all of them. James Freeman, go over there, give me a follow. And while you're there, also give TNT Radio a follow to help us spread the word about all of the good things TNT is doing. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for our breaking news. Hello, Gemma.
Hello there, James. Well, funny you should be talking about the elections, the local elections, where the vote is likely to go, who's likely to vote how, because a new poll out today shows that the political party in the UK, Reform UK, has set a record high in the areas of the north of England, traditionally known as the Red Wall, which basically won the Conservatives the last election. The poll puts Reform on 18%, just 6 points now behind Conservatives in those areas. They hold 24% of the vote. And that's just within a couple of weeks that Reform UK's vote in those areas has risen. It's cause for concern for the Conservatives. If they lose too many of those seats, I think that will be it for them. Because staying with the Conservatives, maybe this is one of the reasons, James, that people are losing their luster for the Conservative Party. A senior Tory MP has been suspended from the party from his trade envoy role for alleged misuse of campaign funds. Mark Mingus, he's MP in the northwest of England. He denies the allegations, but the allegations are that he phoned a campaign manager last December asking for £5,000 because he was being held by, quote, bad people in a flat somewhere. Strange story. Other money is alleged to have come from campaign funds as well. As I say, he denies the allegations, but we haven't heard from him formally today. And Defence Secretary Grant Shapps hasn't ruled out using RAF planes to deport migrants to Rwanda if the bill eventually gets through, if and when it gets through. But it does seem at the moment it has been stalled. Number 10 appears to have abandoned the pledge to get the Rwanda flights off the ground by the spring. We're well into the spring now. And when quizzed on it this morning, Downing Street refused absolutely to answer any questions at all about timetabling of flights getting off the ground. But if they do get off the ground, might well be the Royal Air Force that does the escort to Rwanda for some of the people trying to get into the UK.
What's the thoughts behind that, Gemma? I mean, I know nothing about this, by the way, in terms of what the plan was, presumably just commercial airlines. What's the difference between those and the RAF? Is there a legal sort of thing to do with commercial airlines that might stop them getting off the ground?
Well, I think it's a good question, because if you actually think about the Rwanda headlines, and that's all they've ever been, Rwanda headlines, the Rwanda bill, you know, and the safety of Rwanda, and should we be sending people there, and how much is it costing? No one ever really did drill down into the logistics of how we were going to get them there. And maybe that it was always planned that we would use the RAF. A lot of, obviously, commentators will say the RAF is a defence force, and we're in quite a tricky situation in the Middle East at the moment. I mean, Rishi Sunak confirmed the use of RAF jets over the weekend to help shoot down the Iranian drones. Is deporting illegal asylum seekers to an Central East African country a good use of their resources there? Is it what they're designed for? That could be one of the arguments. It could be that this was always the plan. I'm not entirely sure myself. It makes you think, doesn't it? We get so caught up in the headlines. Drilling down behind them in issues like this is really important.
I don't think it's going to be a problem, because the numbers that are going to be going to Rwanda are going to be quite small. In fact, we could probably put them on a private jet to start off with. I don't think, you know, the reality is that you know, we're not going to be start sending all of our the people coming in boats. Over the summer, we'll have more people coming across in just less than a day, so maybe in half a day, than we can send to Rwanda over the space of a few months. So the numbers are going to be quite small. Obviously, the idea behind this is for it to be a deterrence. Presumably, the British government is going to send people to France. Well, I would, if I was one of the ministers, I'd be sending people to the beaches to hand out leaflets, telling them that the next so many boats that come across are going to be shipped off to Rwanda. That would make them think twice, I think, especially if they're paying, you know, I don't know what they're paying these days, what the going rate is to pay smugglers to get you across the English Channel. But if you think you're going to be picked up and then just shipped off, you might wait a little bit and maybe let someone else go first. And I think, you know, and everybody, if everybody does that, then nobody will come across. That's the idea, I guess. So I don't think that's a problem, using RAF planes. Surely we've got one spare, which we can use for that, given the importance of the policy, if it does work. So I don't see the problem in that. The only other thing I'm going to comment on is Reform's 18%. I still don't think that's enough. You know, analysts that look at this a lot and look at election results, they break them down and work out how many seats parties are going to get. They're still saying that reform, even on 20%, it could get 20% of the vote in the UK and still not get one MP. So I think, you know, that's good news for reform, obviously, that their share of the vote keeps on going up, or share of the polls anyway, keeps on going up. But I think they need to do a lot more. You never know if this Rwanda thing doesn't work and nobody goes to Rwanda, and we do see the influx over the summer, which could happen if we get good weather. That could be the end. That could be the end for the Tories. And that could then, you know, I think if we see reform on 25, 30%, then undoubtedly they're going to get some seats. Still struggle to get lots of seats, though, I think, because, you know, they just don't have that local infrastructure. All of their vote is, you know, widely dispersed across the country rather than being focused on particular seats. But clearly, I'm sure Richard Tice will be happy with those poll results.
Well, I mean, they are in the Red Wall area, which, of course, was crucial to the Conservatives winning the last election. The north of England, which traditionally had been a Labour heartland, the Conservatives managed to steal those votes from Labour. And it looks like a lot of those votes will now be stolen from the Conservatives by Reform UK. That's what the poll looks like. You know, we have a lot of polls, don't we? But this one has been done in quite close proximity to its last poll, shows a significant rise in that area in the north of England, where people, disenfranchised Labour voters, went to the Tories. Now they're disenfranchised Tory voters, and Reform UK seems to be plugging the gap there. So maybe that is a bit more of a targeted area. Maybe they will gain some seats there. Who knows? I mean, we'll know within the next few months. Maybe, like you said about the local elections, that might be an indication if enough people turn out. But just, you know, shifting political landscape in a very strange political year. And like you've said many times, could this spell the end of the Conservative Party? You're not the only one saying that. It is a possibility if the key policies, you know, don't win votes at the ballot boxes.
Well, I think if we see an influx over the summer of people coming across the channel, and this Rwanda bill either not going through or not having any effect, I think that could be the end of the Tory party, which I think would be a good thing, to be honest with you. They need a battering, because we do need a realignment of politics on the right, even if that is a reformed Conservative Party, even if that this is what they need to actually bring them back to actually Conservative values, because they're certainly not a Conservative Party at the moment. Thank you very much for that, Gemma. Speak to you in the second hour of the show. To the rest of you watching, don't go anywhere, because we're going to be talking all about UK politics next. And I'm delighted to be joined by the fantastic Jonathan Tilt. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are. Well, you can get a cup of tea, but that's it. Don't go anywhere. Stay with me, James Freeman, on TNT.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
All the focus of the West, of Washington and its allies, are all focused on Israel right now, to support and help Israel and to somehow contain and deter Iran. Okay. So that means that Russia kind of has an open field with regards to what it wants to do. So think about that for a moment. Could we have a situation in this new world, this multipolar world, where the Iranians and the Russians, their allies, and certainly Russia's not going to slap Iran on the wrist for this latest salvo against Israel? Why? Because it absolutely ties up the United States and its allies right now in the Middle East.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
our next steps to space.
This time we go back to the moon to learn to live, to work, to invent, to create.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, so to talk about all of those elections, and there are a lot of elections coming up, 107 local elections in England for councils there. We've got all the police and crime commissioners. We've got the mayor elections in London and another 12 outside of London. So to talk about all of that, I'm delighted to be welcoming back Jonathan Tilt to the Freeman Report. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on again. And yeah, I'll talk about as much of that as you would like me to do so, but obviously want to focus on the West Yorkshire mayor election, which I'm standing in. So that's where my
family is. Yeah, of course. Jonathan, we talk about all these mayor elections quite a lot, but I'd like to start by just kind of, because I think lots of people just, oh, it's a mayor. They don't actually realise what they're responsible for. So I wonder if you wouldn't mind just starting, just tell us what mayors are responsible for. Does it differ between different cities? Is the mayor in London responsible for more than, say, the mayor in Birmingham? And then we can talk about your campaign.
Yeah, I mean, that's a difficult question to answer because the devolution deal in each part of England is different. So mayors have quite a wide variety of different responsibilities. West Yorkshire Mayor really has two roles. They act as the Police and Crime Commissioner for West Yorkshire. And there are, I would stress that our Police and Crime Commissioner elections across England. So everybody has got the opportunity. It's not just the metropolitan areas. Everybody in England and Wales can vote in Police and Crime Commissioner elections. And that for me is a key role. We are from one angle or another, we are going to get more attempts to lock us down. I have absolutely no doubt about that. And what I will do in conjunction with Suzanne Harborne, who will be the Deputy Mayor for Policing in West Yorkshire, is we will prevent the enforcement of that in West Yorkshire. If you vote for me as mayor, you will not get lockdown enforcement. We can't stop lockdown being declared by central government, but they will not be enforced. We will draw up a new police and crime plan that says no enforcement of lockdowns, business closures, and all the other obscene restrictions we had in 2020-2021. So that's what's at stake here. This isn't about the potholes, important as they are, or the bins being emptied. You can put us in a position to protect you from lockdown enforcement, and I would beg of you to do that. And there are police and crime commissioners elsewhere, particularly Gloucestershire, I think, who are taking that line as well. So I would encourage you to vote for them as well. Because if we have just one area in the country, one area in England or Wales that says we're not doing this, the whole thing will fall apart.
Yeah, and I don't think you're sort of... picking at straws or whatever there, Jonathan, because obviously we've got this WHO, the Pandemic Accord, which is an international treaty, which at the moment the government is just saying it's going to sign, which essentially hands this all of this over to the WHO. So we could see the WHO calling a pandemic, which it can do. You know, there's no democracy about this. They can just call it a global pandemic. And then this new treaty will allow them to force governments to call lockdowns, to mandate certain medicines, all this kind of thing. So I think you're right, actually. There is a risk. I'm hoping that doesn't happen. But it's very, very reassuring, I think, or it will be, to get people like you, Jonathan, into those positions so that we can put a stop to them. What are your thoughts, Jonathan, also on the police and kind of in recent years we've seen, you know, them pushing or certainly getting involved in the LGBT kind of culture. We've seen police cars painted out in rainbow colours. We've seen police, pride marches and that kind of thing. What's your kind of view on all that? Because I think that really does wind people up a lot, because we shouldn't be seeing these ideologies within the police force. They should be there to do the primary job of policing.
Yeah, no, it's a complete distraction and it's wrong, and it diverts resources away from frontline policing. We're about to have, just one example, we're about to have 100 million spent on transition to bus franchising, new bus services, which this isn't related to policing. The one clear campaign message I'm getting back time and time again, and I wasn't expecting this, but the thing I'm getting fed into me all the time is people won't use the buses because they're not safe, because they're not policed. They've all got cameras on them, but if anything happens, no policeman ever looks at the incident. Nothing ever happens. Young voters particularly feeding this back to me. So we're going to spend hundreds of millions on new bus franchising, and people will still not use the buses because they're not safe, because they're not being policed properly. And we can divert resources away from the diversity agenda to help do that. But there's much, much bigger areas where we can divert resources away from. West Yorkshire Police spend about 16% of their budget on police pensions, on payments to retired police officers. Now, we can't change the police retirement scheme because that's set down in statute. But we do see that there's police authorities, particularly Lincolnshire, for example, where it's only 10% is being spent on police pensions. So why are West Yorkshire spending so much more on pensions than most other police forces? And we think it's probably because they're retiring people too early. And that's running up a cost for future years. I mean, your background statistics, isn't it? So, I mean, you'll be further ahead of this than me. But we think there's a massive opportunity there to release hundreds of millions of pounds, far more than diverting away from the diversity agenda, right, as it would be to do that. But we think there's a massive opportunity there to actually police the buses and make them safer so that people do use them.
And how would you go about doing that? Are you talking about just police doing the rounds and getting on buses, or how are you going to make them safer?
Well, yeah, I mean, my campaign is as much about listening as telling. I didn't go into this to campaign on bus safety. But the thing that I keep getting told is that incidents, and quite serious violent incidents, happen on buses. They're recorded on cameras. The cameras on the buses record these incidents, but then nothing happens. And nothing happens because it's not a police priority, is it? Or a bus company priority, or both?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of thinking out loud, I mean, I guess the only thing with that from your point of view is presumably, because you said there that this is an issue for young people. So I guess my next question to you is, you know, what are you doing to try and get young people out to vote? Because one of the problems we see in a lot of these other elections, other than the general election, it's not just, you know, local elections or mayor elections, is the low turnout. I'm assuming young people are not coming out to vote, but also around half of the electorate don't turn out for these elections. What are you trying to do to address that?
Well, we're campaigning incredibly hard with the increasing number of volunteers we have out on the streets, leafleting, canvassing. There was a youth forum hustings the other night, an online one on Zoom. Six candidates for this mayoral post. I was the only one that turned up to it. The other five couldn't be bothered to come and talk to the representative from youth clubs, basically, across West Yorkshire. So that's what I'm doing. But the non-voting is the number one issue. And you're not hurting the politicians by not voting. And I think it could be very low. What we're seeing is that the Labour vote is collapsing because of their support for arms sales to Israel. That's the Labour vote is without a doubt in free fall. But the fear is that it will just stay at home, not vote for an alternative. The Conservative vote is in complete free fall because they're generally rubbish at running the country and demonstrate that on a daily basis. So the main two parties, their voters are deserting them. But our big concern is they desert them by staying at home. And we beg with you to vote for an independent candidate. The party system is corrupted and captured. You won't change that by voting Green or voting for the Yorkshire Party. But you can change it by voting for an independent.
And that is the problem, isn't it, Jonathan? Because
it is the number one problem. It's the number one problem. Is that a non-vote is an alternative way of voting for whoever wins, because you've had the opportunity to vote against them and you haven't used that opportunity. Stress this message. Hold your nose. It's not, you're not endorsing the system. I don't think representative democracy is brilliant, but it's something we've got, something we can use, and I will use it to prevent the enforcement of lockdown. So if you want me to do that, I need your support on the 2nd of May. It is that simple.
Yeah, because the problem is with all of this is the people that do come out to vote are generally all the people that are supported by local government, by the Labour Party. They are the diehard people that are kind of involved maybe in local politics that are kind of involved with the parties which are already in power. And the other point is, Jonathan, you'll know this very, very well, when 25% of people only come out to vote, to change the election results, you don't need that many new people or that many people to come out and vote differently. So this is a huge opportunity. And of course, the other thing, Jonathan, before we move on, we've just got to take a quick break in a second, and then we'll talk about wider elections in the UK this year. The other thing that people need to realise is, you know, general elections are all very well, but you know, with the advent of 15-minute cities, with LTNs, and there's a whole load of policies which are coming down the road, which are nothing to do with Westminster. They're all to do with local politics, to do with mayors and all the control that they have. So these elections actually are really important. So people do need to get out to vote, which I'm sure, Jonathan, you're spending every day at the moment telling people. Right, we're going to take a quick short break now, Jonathan, but don't go anywhere, because after this break, we're going to talk about UK politics more widely. So make sure you stay there, Jonathan. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us right here on TNT.
We're ready.
News. The news
is our business, and we never close.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. Beijing has hit out at Australia after Canberra announced it was injecting an extra $50 billion into its armed forces over the next 10 years to help counteract China in the Indo-Pacific.
China firmly opposes this. We hope that Australia will correctly understand China's development and strategic intentions.
And Washington has reportedly agreed to spare WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange the death penalty if he is extradited to the US on espionage charges.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
Right. Now, Jonathan, I know you were listening to Gemma Cooper when she was talking about the breaking news. We've heard that poll, that Reform in the Red Wall area, their share of the polls now is up to 18%. What are your thoughts on Reform, I guess, and, you know, whether they're actually they could break through and get somebody elected?
I think I would live in the absolute heart of the Red Wall. I think Wakefield, which is my local town, has been described as the Red Wall capital before now. So I'm right there in the midst of this. I don't see reform even existing on the ground. They haven't got a mayoral candidate. I'm not personally aware of any of the standing for any local council seats in West Yorkshire. They will be standing for some, and I've just not seen it. But there's no evidence of reform even existing in terms of having ground troops, in terms of doing any leafleting, or even having just paper candidates. They don't seem to be doing that. I mean, if they were serious, they would be standing. I'm delighted they're not standing for the mayoral election because it increases my chances. But if they were a serious party, they would be standing for the mayoral elections in West Yorkshire and elsewhere. So, you know, I personally don't believe these polls. There's two other wider issues I have with reform. One, it isn't a political party. It's a limited company that is owned by two people.
Yeah.
You are not a member. You've been a reform candidate, James. You know this more painfully than I do. The other fundamental problem I have with Richard Tice is that he supported the vaccine program. He wanted Tony Blair to be the vaccine czar, and he supported, as I and others were desperately campaigning to try and protect the care workers who were being hounded out of their livelihoods. And Tice sat there and said they all should be vaccinated. It should be a condition of employment. So I have fundamental objections with Richard Tice as a result of his support for the mandatory vaccination program. Reform, there's issues about them not being a party, but the wider issue is that they don't exist. They're not here, they're on the ground. They're not standing in the local elections. I think across the country, they've got less candidates than they had last year. So that looks like a decline, not an advance to me.
Yeah, exactly. I think the problem I've got, there is a problem with the reform. And like you said, it is a limited company, not a political party. That's a problem for me, but it's also a problem for them. And I think it's one of the reasons why they don't have that local infrastructure, why they don't have, because look, you know, all the other parties, they have lots of local people who become members of the party. They have a vote. They have a say in the party. And that means they have a stake in the game, you know. So they when it comes to election time, they will come out. They will help deliver leaflets. They will provide that infrastructure which you need, because they've got, like I said, they've got a stake in the game. Reform don't have that, and it's a problem for them. The other problem that I've got with Richard Tice is I don't know whether he gets research or does polls for him to help him decide what his policy, but he quite often just comes out with these things which clearly he thinks what voters want to hear. But because he hasn't, you know, because he doesn't actually talk to people, and I don't think he's got that political nous, he quite often gets calls them wrong, and then he has to backtrack. And the whole vaccine thing, that's exactly what he did, because at the time, you're correct, he was calling for mandatory vaccinations in the care industry, and he was very, very supportive of the whole thing until he realised a lot of his prospective voters or people that he was potentially calling out to were totally against that. And I did see this week that there's another one which I think he's going to probably have to backtrack at some point, and that is his unequivocal support for Israel. And, you know, he's still using this Israel has the right to defend itself. I think anybody with an ounce of sense, whether, you know, we all think, anybody sensible, that of course Israel have got their right, a right to defend themselves, but what they're doing is not a defence. And anyone still using that phrase now, I think, is on the wrong side of public opinion. That's just my view. But I know an awful lot of people who think the same thing, even if they support Israel. I think it's clear now with what's going on there, the number of civilians that are being killed and everything, that you cannot say that Israel is defending itself. Right, anyway, I'm going off track, Jonathan. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but what do you think, what is your call for this year in terms of the general election? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I always thought there'd be a general election on the same day as the mayoral elections on May the 2nd, so I got that one wrong, obviously, so perhaps my calls aren't going to be that accurate. I suspect the upcoming elections on May the 2nd will be absolutely disastrous for the Conservative Party, beyond anything they've ever experienced before in terms of electoral annihilation. That will lead to the departure of Sunak. They will put somebody else in place without an election. The person they put in place will probably lead to a narrowing of the poll gaps between them and Labour. And we will be herded into an election in the autumn, which will be billed as being very tight and close. So everybody will be herded into voting Conservative or Labour. I think the Reform vote will collapse, and I think the smaller parties and some of the independents will struggle. I think we will then probably get a Labour government for 4 years, or maybe not even that long, which will be horrendous. They will try and implement lockdowns and all the rest of it. And at the end of that, I think the whole system probably does start to collapse and deteriorate and disintegrate, because people realise that politics practiced through political parties is the road to destruction, and we need to start voting independent. So I'm really, in a way, focused on the next general election, the one after we've experienced Starmer for a couple of years, because I think at that point it will turn dramatically and there will be just utter revulsion with the whole political framework and the whole system of using political parties. Yeah.
Jonathan, I totally agree with you. I think there is a reckoning coming, I'm hoping, although I think like you, it doesn't look like it's going to be this year, but I'm hoping that something will happen this year to make it happen this year, because I don't think I can, the thought of commenting for another 5 years on the fact that nobody came out to vote or they're just voting for blue and red really does, is quite depressing. But let's hope something happens. But I think I agree with you that there is a reckoning coming at some point. Jonathan Tilts, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Jonathan. Really wish you the best of luck in that mayor election in West Yorkshire. I really do hope you do well. And please do come back on the Freeman Report again soon.
Yeah, thanks. And it's been fun meeting with you again, James. Cheers.
Right. OK, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be speaking with Jeff Buys Cars. So don't go anywhere. Stay with me, James Freeman, right here on TNT.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper. We have to redefine what being a strong man is and heal. Love your mind.
On a virtual road, you can test the limits of your driving ability to see how fast you can go under the most extreme conditions, like when it's dark, when the weather's bad, or when the unexpected happens. The higher the speed, the harder the impact. But driving isn't a game or a race. When you're on the road, just 10 miles per hour over the limit can mean the difference between life and death. You're responsible for people's lives and your own. Slow down and save lives.
The Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay, I'm delighted to be welcoming my next guest, Jeff Bikes Cars. I have listened to him a few times on Locked and Loaded with Rick Bunn, so I'm delighted that he's now joining me on the Freeman Report. Hello, Jeff, how are you doing?
Good morning, afternoon, how are you?
I'm very, very good. Right, Jeff, I'm really keen to hear what you think of this big, well, in my view, it's a big bugger's muddle waiting to happen, this whole EV market. The government, of course, has mandated that by 2030, 80% of new car sales and 70% of new van sales have got to be zero emissions. And at the moment, EVs are really the only kind of technology on the mass market. All of that, well, consumers are showing that they're not really interested in them, and the infrastructure isn't there. Even the electricity grid, if everybody got an EV tomorrow, the whole thing would collapse. So, Jeff, what do you think is going to happen? Because it looks like a mess waiting to happen to me.
I think what's going to happen is the vehicle manufacturers are going to end up pushing back against this. And we've already seen this a little bit so far. So the German manufacturers are realizing that the big EV push was really just a ticket to nowhere. And I think the only thing that the sort of inevitable final destination for this is that we go back to where we were, which is the car manufacturers. They're desperately now trying to claw back some of the investments that they've made in these EVs that, as you say, are not selling. We're not finding private buyers for these EVs, even if they are selling to fleets. It's the private buyers that we need in order to drive the demand for these EVs. And the fact that there's no demand in the secondhand market, as we've discussed before, it just means that the residuals are terrible. So the values drop through the floor, and that just sort of perpetuates the whole thing. So we've got this situation where nobody really wants these cars unless you're forced to have one as a company car. So the manufacturers are kind of left there, you know, footing the bill.
Yeah, now there are some people, and I'm quite attracted to this argument that actually this big, sort of the big plan going forward is nobody's going to have any cars anymore. And actually what we will have is self-driving cars, which people can just hire. You know, you just get an app and you can call one up. They'll be sat locally. A lot of people are suspicious that that is the real aim in terms of what governments and where they want us to go. And this whole EV thing is just a big distraction. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's a drum that I've been banging for a long time on my YouTube channel, trying to get people to understand that the goal was never to get you out of your car and into an EV. The goal was quite simply just to get you out of your car. As you said in the intro there, there isn't enough infrastructure to move every, you know, if you could click your fingers right now and say, right, everybody that owns a petrol or a diesel car, let's just click our fingers and turn them into electric. It doesn't work. The grid collapses. Yeah. It flat out doesn't work. So the goal was never to move everybody across to electric cars. It was just to get you out of your car and stop you going places. And again, you can be called a conspiracy theorist for saying, oh, you know, there's a nefarious plan to stop us going places. And you say, well, look at what's happening with everything else. You know, you've got the low emission zones now that you're not allowed to drive in if you're in a car of a certain age. We've got low traffic neighborhoods going on in the UK, which is essentially someone just sticking some bollards up at the end of a road and deciding that cars aren't allowed to go down there anymore. Then you've got the German transport minister who just came under fire for saying that he might propose to ban driving on the weekends. And all of these things are sort of, the little news stories are starting to come together. And the guys that were initially thought of as conspiracy theorists, people are now starting to go, hang on a minute, maybe that nutter from YouTube was actually onto something.
I wouldn't go as far as to call you a nutter, Jeff. But what do you think about, because look, I've thought about this quite a lot. if we could have cars that did self-drive, that you could literally just have an app, there would be local sort of depots where they would just sit locally. And so you could literally get your app out. Within, say, 2, 3, 4 minutes, a car would turn up and it would take you wherever you wanted to go. The costs could be a lot lower than owning a car because you don't have to MOT it. You've got economies of scale, all of these things. And of course, you know, unlike taxi drivers, you don't need a person to drive it. So from that, when you think about that, it actually looks quite attractive, not having to bother about taking your car to the garage to get it fixed and all these things. I think for me, though, the problem I have is the control aspect. Is, you know, the government suddenly own or can control access to vehicles. What are your thoughts? I mean, do you think that this could work if it was done correctly?
Well, hang on. Let me just put my new hat on. Okay, I'm going to put my hat on that says I am now a government minister. All right. And I think it's a brilliant idea, because what that means is when someone picks up their phone to summon their car to take them somewhere, the phone would go, well, hang on a minute. Are you actually a dissident? Are you someone that the government doesn't like? Are you trying to go outside of your 15-minute zone? Are you trying to meet up with someone who is also a dissident? And then they've got the complete control to prevent you from going anywhere at all.
Yeah.
So as much as the idea will be sold to the youngsters that we've got to reach with all of this, the idea will be sold to the youngsters that they can book it on their phone like they do an Uber, and they won't have to pay for car insurance, and they won't have to pay for road tax and all this sort of stuff. They won't realize the freedoms that they've handed away by not standing up and defending our right to jump in a petrol or diesel car, fill it full of petrol as far as you want without telling everybody. So yeah, it's the control aspect that worries me.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we've got the train system at the moment, and we've you know, in the UK here, we've got one of the most expensive train networks in Europe. So I'm sure what will actually happen as well is consumers will just be ripped off. It's a real shame, isn't it, Jeff? Because we've got these new technologies coming through. I mean, the other big one, I guess, is digital money. I think actually that could be revolutionary in so many ways to have that. But again, it comes down to government. It seems that although government is kind of trying to push and say that we need to do these things for green reasons, for environmental reasons, and there are some good arguments for all of this, for that, it seems to be the reason people like you and me that are more clued up push back against it is because actually we just don't trust governments. That's the problem with all of these things, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's basically it. I think you've nailed it. We don't trust them as far as we can throw.
Yes.
We've seen the way governments have behaved over the last 4 years, you know, whether it's Canada or New Zealand or Australia or the UK. We've seen how they have behaved with controlling people. We've seen how they've behaved with spending money, lies. I mean, you name it, and it's been done either by the government or to us by the government. And why would we want the government then to have complete control over a national digital currency? It's extremely scary, especially as, you know, we just discussed the concept of, well, I'm going to try and book a car to go outside of my 15-minute zone, and then my phone is going to flag up and say, no, you're not allowed to do that because we've got you on a list as a government detractor. And then it's the same when you're going to try spend some money. It's going to say, you know, your current amount of money is timed out because you said something on social media last week, so you've got to wait 3 days to spend any more of your digital money. The problem is, and this is where I have major issues, we're sort of standing on a precipice now where the world is starting to look like every dystopian novel and movie we've ever seen. And the task that seems so difficult, all the things that we've been saying, we've seen them in movies and books, and they weren't good in those movies and books. So trying to get people to realize that digital ID and digital cars and digital tracking and digital cameras and facial recognition, all this sort of stuff, we've seen it in Minority Report and 1984 and The Matrix and every movie that we've seen about dystopia. We seem to be moving that direction, and yet we can't manage to get the normal people to realize that these are not good things.
Yeah, it's such a shame because I think, you know, in digital money, we know what the answer is to get over our distrust of governments, and that's decentralization, so that we take middlemen and governments out of the equation. We don't actually need them to do transactions. That technology exists. You know, I think it's such a shame, really, because, you know, I think I could get over the fact that, you know, I might like a blue car or a faster car or a car with leather interior. I could get over all of that if it was really, really cheap, really, really convenient. And you know, I didn't have to worry about MOTs and all of that and insurance and all that anymore. I could be persuaded. As long as I can still have a motorbike for the weekends, as long as I can still do that, I could go with it. But I'm going to push back like you because I just do not trust the governments. Jeff, let's also talk about new technologies in cars in general, because I was looking at some stats this morning in the US, and I think Honda have got 6.3 million recalls in the US market. Ford have got 6.1, and very, very similar numbers for other manufacturers. What's going on? Is this just car companies trying to pack cars with loads of new technology, which, to be frank, I don't know, I know about myself. I bought a 10-year-old BMW that's got buttons, hasn't got a screen on it, because I don't want all of that. It's just more things to go wrong. It's confusing. And I want a car that drives me from A to B. I don't want lots of new technology. What's going on?
I think you've sort of nailed it there. I mean, for me and for my YouTube channel, my perfect era of cars is, let's say, mid-90s to early 2000s. That is the point when cars have got everything that they need on them. They're comfortable, they're reliable, they're well built, and they're safe. But then after 2005-06, I think the manufacturers realized that they'd reached peak car. Like they'd got to a point where they built the perfect car. You know, it will last for 250,000 miles without any like major surgery. It's safe, it's good looking, you can drive it every day. And after that, they go, well, how on earth are we going to sell anyone a new car if we've already built the best thing ever? And the answer is more technology. So we get more driver assistance that really those of us that enjoy driving never wanted in the first place. We've got more software. Everything then goes from, you know, all of your buttons, suddenly everything is on a touch screen. You've got a touch screen for your sat nav. You've got a touch screen for your climate control. You've got a touch screen for all your different driver settings. And I think the other side is cutting costs. So when you combine extra technology that nobody needs that is extremely complex with companies that want to cut costs and want to buy their products that are going into their cars from whoever is putting in the lowest bid, you've got a recipe for all these recalls. And I think I saw the same article that you did. There's been a few articles recently about just how many cars these big manufacturers have got under recall at the moment. And the big one is the airbag company. It was something like 67 million recalled due to airbags. It's wild.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. And of course, you know, this whole thing about sort of not owning stuff and renting stuff, I think it's BMW that we've seen recently, isn't it? That what is it? If you want you buy your BMW, it comes with seat warmers. But if you want to turn those seat warmers on, you have to subscribe. I mean, I think, am I correct? That was BMW, wasn't it?
I think BMW were the first people, I think they were the first to come out with a sort of press release saying that they were gonna offer those services. But I did receive an email from someone the other day about Mercedes-Benz saying a very similar thing, that if they didn't carry on paying the subscription, then they were going to lose things like the central locking and stuff like that. And again, you start thinking, well, what's going to happen to these? Let's say you've got a huge car manufacturer who's been making cars and then they go bust. Well, if they're no longer supporting the software, and if your manufacturer has gone bump, so you can't get your software update, then how can you guarantee the safety of your car if it's not running the latest software system? So then you're completely beholden to the manufacturer for everything. It's not like in the old days where you just buy a car, you leave the dealer, and you don't actually have to see the dealer again. You know, we are now looking at subscription services and people are buying cars in a totally different way.
I don't think he'll catch on, to be honest with you. I really don't, because I think, well, for me, it offends me to think that I can buy something. I mean, my phone quite often does that. I've paid a lot of money for that. I don't pay it off monthly. And it really annoys me that they insist on doing certain things to it and changing it. And I'm like, no, this is mine. I own it. Hands off. Right. But we've got about a minute left to go, Jeff. I did see you that you posted on the weather in Dubai. What do you make of what's going on there?
Someone's cocked something up, haven't they, with the weather in Dubai? They've they've over-egged it. They've held the finger on the button for slightly too long, and they've played their cards when they didn't mean to. But I'm just a conspiracy theorist. But I mean, geoengineering and weather manipulation, you can read the patents. It's been around for a very, very long time, and I think someone's overdone it in Dubai. I think it's as simple as that.
Really, really interesting, because I've seen videos that are put out by the government there admitting that they do it. So I'm wondering, given the scenes we've seen with all of those vehicles underwater, whether anybody's actually going to take the Dubai government to court. I don't know. But seems a bit dodgy, doesn't it, to be doing that? The millions of pounds worth of, or maybe even billions, I don't know. Jeff, you've been absolutely fantastic. Please do come back on the Freeman Report for me. Quickly before you go, where do people go to subscribe to you on YouTube?
Type in Jeff Buys Cars on YouTube and you'll find me. I've also got TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and Twitter as well. Anywhere, basically, you'll find me on the net.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Jeff Buys Cars. Thank you, Jeff.